What do dogs think about? What motivates them? What makes them behave the way they do or misbehave? On today's Please Explain, we're going to talk about dog psychology and canine-human relations with a dog whisperer, Cesar Millan, who is the host of his own program by that name on National Geographic and the author of a new book called Cesar's Way, The Natural Everyday Guide to Understanding and Correcting Dog Problems. It is published by Harmony Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Millan to my show today. Hello.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
And before we get going, we should clear things up. You're neither a veterinary behaviorist nor a certified applied animal behaviorist. You're somebody who learned about dogs by dealing with dogs?
Well, I think you learn a lot more from Mother Nature when you are around Mother Nature and being taught by your grandfather, who understand my nature very well. So, you know, learning how to control a pack of dogs, you don't go to university for that. You actually have to earn the position.
And this is something you've been doing for a long time. I gather they used to call you El Perrero when you were 13 years old, the dog man.
That was my nickname. So I already had that connection with dogs since early age, which is something that you can't get in school.
Did you go through what most of us do, looking into a dog's eyes and wondering, what's he thinking?
I was always curious about why the frogs do what they do and the ants do what they do and all the different kinds of species that we surround ourselves from. But the dog was captivated my attention the most, and my family knew how to control a group of dogs. And when I watched Rin Tin Tin and Lassie, that's when I say, I want to be the best dog trainer in the world, but I have to learn from those guys.
I always wondered how Lassie was able to tell the adults that the kid had fallen in a well, but...
Well, that was a conditioned behavior.
Well, how accurate was the New Yorker cartoon that had a woman coming home to an excited dog? The balloon over her head is a heart saying, you know, oh, the dog is loves me. And the balloon over the dog's head is a can of dog food being poured into a bowl.
I can totally see that, yeah. It's very accurate.
So we're reading what we want to read into Absolutely. So many dog signals. Why are we getting it wrong?
Well, this is my observation, okay? My clients see the relationship with their dogs this way. From a spiritual point of view, emotional point of view, intellectual point of view, but they don't see instinctual point of view. My point of view is instinctual, emotional, spiritual. So if you follow things in a certain order, you're going to create certain reaction.
Because a dog is not thinking. The dog is responding to instinct.
There is no knowledge behind instinct. It's all reaction. Heart open surgery is a thinking process. No other species do that.
Well, humans have been living with dogs since ancient times. Did we understand that relationship better in the past?
I think our ancestors had a better understanding about Mother Nature, you know, in general than the understanding that we have now. We are so much into the intellectual point of view and creating things and satellites and stuff, when before we used to observe birds flying and observe the way animals migrate, and we will get a message from it. And so Native Americans are a great example for American people how they were in tune to Mother Nature. You know, civilization came into the picture and they created a different understanding or connection among human dogs.
And they didn't think of dogs as being some form of the human family.
You know, before, Native Americans used to call themselves the name of that species. Now we call, you know, Mikey the bear. So we are humanizing animals in this era, and we're not allowing them to be themselves, and that's my belief why they develop issues.
Well, we think of dogs as giving us love and affection. In fact, when cat people argue with dog people, the dog people say, well, cats don't show you love, but dogs do. But love and affection, you say, are less important in the relationship than exercise and discipline.
From an instinctual point of view, absolutely, because animals begin with physical, psychological activities before they go into any other activity, which we call that affection. So if you study a pack of dogs, they wake up, they stretch, and they move. Where are they going? To find food and water. What do they do after they find food and water? They celebrate. So exercise, discipline, then affection.
Well, most people don't walk their dog very much. I mean, they go out. If they are walking the dog, they live in high rises here in New York. They go out. They hope the dog will urinate and maybe, if they're lucky, also defecate. and then they turn around and go back upstairs.
Yeah, it's what serves the needs of the human. You know, whatever, okay, get it over with so I can feel fine, and I know you pee and you poop, and I'm done with you. You know, so my feelings are not hurt because I left you behind 13 hours. Yeah, so it's all about what the human, how can the human fulfill himself through the dog?
But you say we should, a dog needs 45 minutes of exercise in the morning. Who has 45 minutes before they go to work?
I understand, and this is why it's so important, the awareness, you know, because before you get into a relationship, you have to understand what is best for the other half. So if you just go into a relationship with a dog because you don't have a child or you don't have a human to love, and you use the dog to fulfill that empty space, and that becomes a selfish relationship. You know, so a dog needs to walk because dogs walk, birds fly, and fish swim. They have to walk every day.
My guest is Cesar Millan, star of National Geographic Channel's Dog Whisperer. He has a new book called Cesar's Way, The Natural Everyday Guide to Understanding and Correcting Common Dog Problems. It's published by Harmony Books. And this is our Please Explain segment on the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. And Please Explain means that we also take your calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. So if we're not exercising the dog for 45 minutes and we are seeing the dog as really something to show us a lot of love and affection, it's get incredibly positive feelings when the dog puts his head in our lap and then goes to sleep or rolls on his back and shows us that he's totally vulnerable to us. What's happening to that dog? Is that dog being thrown out of natural dog balance?
Of course. If a dog doesn't get to do his exercise and his psychological stimulation on a daily basis, he's not going to be able to accomplish balance. They don't follow emotional pack leader or lovable pack leader. They follow a dominant pack leader. So without these experiences, without this information, how can they accomplish balance? Affection doesn't create balance, intensifies the state of mind that they're in. Otherwise, I would not be in business because America is one of the countries that love dogs the most, but this is the country that has more unstable dogs. You know, I'm from a third world country. We have skinny dogs, but our dogs don't have issues. They're skinny, but they don't have psychological issues.
Well, how do they choose who is the leader of the pack?
What do you mean? And explain.
You say, well, they're pack animals.
Yes.
And they choose a leader, and if they... I guess in some cases nobody takes that role in the family dynamic. Does the dog then say, well, I'm the leader? Or does the dog just choose the person who it feels is the best for the job?
Well, in a pack of dogs, they're born, you know, the ones who are born to be leaders, that's what they're born for. And they're going to take the position immediately.
Well, I thought I was a born leader.
In a relationship human-dog, if a human shares affection first, the dog normally takes the leadership because they don't see affection as a dominant energy. They see affection as a soft energy. So soft energy, you can only have a follower position. Or you're the leader or you're the follower.
So what happens when the dog is thrown out of balance? What kinds of misbehaviors do we see?
Well, psychologically speaking, nervousness, fear, tension, insecurity, separation anxiety, aggression, red zone, excess amount of dominance, antisocial behavior, all the side effects that you can think of come from the lack of exercise and leadership.
So when people leave the house and the dog starts barking immediately and then starts scratching at the door, that's because that we have mistrained the dog?
Well, we have not fulfilled the dog, you know. So I guarantee you, if you exercise a dog and then you leave without feeling bad about leaving, the dog is going to go into a tired state, which that makes him go into a resting mode.
The writer John Katz in the new work of dogs suggests that the role of dogs is changing from outdoor protectors and retrievers to indoor companions, and that we're asking them fairly suddenly in the history of the world to adjust to an entirely new way of being. Is that the way you see it?
Domesticated, what it means to me is they're not going to hunt for food. Doesn't mean they're not going to work for food. So for them to be allowed to exercise and be told what to do in the outside world allows them to earn their food. They're not going to hunt, but they still have to work for food.
So if people come to you and they say, my dog has real problems, Do you think about the dog, or do you think about the owner first?
I definitely see the side effect in a dog, but I focus more on what the human is not doing for the dog. You know, most of the people blame the dog. Well, my dog is this, 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 this. But and then I sit down and I help them to analyze the situation. Okay, what is it that you are doing that your dog is not balanced?
Well, there are certain dogs that are more dangerous than others, aren't
there? Powerful. I mean,
pit bulls, for example, are a lot more likely to bite somebody than golden retrievers.
Well, because they're more powerful. So if you want to own powerful,
I mean, a pit bull is more powerful. A little pit bull is more powerful than a big golden retriever or a great.
Absolutely,
Dane?
Yeah, more power. I mean, they have their power in their own kind. Like a golden retriever, their power is to swim, to retrieve, and that's a powerful activity, right? A pit bull has a different choices or a different genetical background. But in order for you to control, in order for anybody to control a powerful dog, it's important to walk the dog, lead the dog every day. A tired dog doesn't get himself in trouble. I'll give you an example, okay? I'm from L.A. In L.A., we have a lot of homeless people that walk pit bulls. Those dogs are not out of balance. They live with homeless people, but they're not out of balance. And this is pit bulls. So it's not the pit bull. It's not the breed. Is the human who's behind them. Mm-hmm. So why homeless people can control powerful breed and my clients can't walk a golden retriever? You understand? Because a homeless person is unconsciously practicing a primal behavior. If you ever observe a homeless with a dog, you see a homeless in front and dog behind. And a lot of time off the leash. My clients can't walk a chihuahua.
But you, at your center, you work with dogs in packs.
Yes.
So is that a good thing? For example, sometimes people will send their dog off to the doggy school or whatever. That's when the dogs are all getting together with other dogs. Is that something that dogs really need?
Oh, dogs are pack-oriented species. Absolutely. Dogs learn from other dogs. So in situations where I can't influence a dog, I definitely need the pack to help me to influence that dog that I can't influence because I am a human being. Mm-hmm. You know. But they're definitely tell a new dog who runs the pack, and I run the pack. And most of these dogs that you're mentioning are pit bulls. Dogs, they had a bad past, but they now live under dog state of mind, not breed state of mind. Remember, it's animal, dog, breed, name. My goal is to make a calm, submissive dog, regardless of the breed.
A submissive dog?
Calm, submissive dog.
Calm.
Calm, submissive dog.
Yeah, well, and all dogs can be calm and submissive if we
just
treat
like
them right?
Just like all humans can go into a calm, submissive state. Like going to meditation time, you are in a calm, submissive state. Going to church, you go into a calm, submissive state. Submission is not a bad thing in the animal world. Submission is a state of mind.
But when dogs are sometimes set free, I mean, abandoned, they return to a feral state, don't they? So they always in the back of their heads, as part of their wiring, is the knowledge that they can go out and hunt and survive in the wild?
Absolutely. I mean, the animal is always there. They're always going to be animal. We are animal, you know, different species. So if we are throwing in the Amazons, we're not going to use so much the human in us. We're going to use more the animal in us because that's what is going to allow us to survive, the animal and you.
Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. My guest is Cesar Millan, who is the host of National Geographic Channel's Dog Whisperer series, and he's also the author of Cesar's Way, The Natural Everyday Guide to Understanding and Correcting Common Dog Problems from Harmony Books. Our number again, 212-433-9692. Stay with us. And we're back with Cesar Millan on today's Please Explain, taking your calls at 212 1-800-433-9692. And let's go right to Dan from New York. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well.
And Cesar, how are you? Both you guys love both the shows.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Fantastic shows. One quick comment and then a quick question. Back to the pit bulls. My firehouse pit bull is a feral dog. We took him in off the street. He's the best behaved dog. He's fantastic around kids. So I totally agree with Cesar on that. Also, number two, I have friends who have a purebred pointer. They crate him during the day. I'm a little leery about that, and I know it's supposed to produce a calmer dog, and the dog is well-behaved, but I was wondering what Cesar's thoughts on crating dogs were.
Well, as long as we tire the dog before he goes into the crate, and then the crate becomes a resting environment.
So it is kind of his own space.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he is in it, tire.
But that's rarely the case. What's happening is people go off to work, they put the dog in the crate, the dog has had a 3-minute walk. You're saying they have to do things, either go out with him, or if you are lucky enough to have a backyard or something, just let the dog run around a bit?
You have to learn to fulfill. I know that that's going to be like the biggest obstacle for a lot of people. Hey, I don't have the time. Well, you have to make the time. This is just the way you should do the best way to show love to your dog, fulfill the dog needs, not just to give affection and tell him how beautiful he is. You're just fulfilling your own needs.
And is that why sometimes people come home and find the dog has ripped up the place and done all sorts of other things?
Frustration leads the mind into destructive behavior.
We go to Mary Beth from Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. And you?
No, fine, thank you.
And what about your dog?
We have an adorable dog. We just adopted her. She's a little Bichon, 12 years old. And she had lived with my mother for many years. My mother passed away. And my question is, can a dog be too submissive? She's so submissive. She's great with the kids. She's wonderful with us. But she's always going into a submissive position whenever anyone approaches her.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best thing we can do with a dog that is this sensitive is not to approach and allow them to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we stop the escalation from her going into that sensitive state of mind. Submission is good, but when they get too sensitive, that is bad for them. So the best thing you can do is just allow that dog to come to you. The approach have to change.
Mm-hmm. Oh, could you give me an example of how? I mean, she'll come to us when we take her out, and you know, when we feed her and whatnot, but. Anything else we can do to encourage her to come to us?
Well, you can hold a piece of food, and then that attracts her to come to you, and then eventually you condition the mind that when you wave your hand, that means come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can do one time you get food and one time you don't get food. You just give affection just because she came to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Try it.
Okay.
And you say that when people actually are able to get their dogs to change their behavior, they feel more empowered.
The human?
Yes.
Absolutely. You become, it reflects in your actions, you know. So if your dog is balanced, that means you are providing balance. So one thing that you can't buy balance. You have to work on it.
Carrie from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi. Actually, I'm in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
And I love your show, Cesar. Thank you for everything you do for people.
Thank you.
I exercise my dog a ton. I'm a half a block from the park, and she runs 3 to 4 times a day. I work home, so that's very good for that purpose. She's a 6-year-old shepherd mix, I think mixed with Carolina dog or the American dingo.
Mm-hmm.
And the only problem we have with her, she's a fantastic dog, incredibly affectionate and confident and loving. But the only problem we have with her is she is aggressive towards other dogs approaching her as well as people approaching her, and she's never bitten a person. But I am concerned with children. I don't feel comfortable with a child approaching her to pet her, and I'm wondering what I can do. She's much better now than she used to be. She used to take off after another dog, and she would bite another dog. Now she doesn't bite the dogs, but she chases them and barrels them over, and of course creates a really tense situation with other humans. And there's a fantastic dog park just a half a block away where hundreds of dogs chase each other around, and unfortunately I can't take her there. I have to go to my own little corner of the park and throw balls for her, and I would love to see that change.
Tell me about the walk. How good are you in the walk?
Well, she is really good on. She's good on the leash. The only thing, and she jogs with me. I can ride my bike and have her on a leash, and she'll run next to me. She's very good. The only problem is, and it's especially bad if, say, if I were to sit down on the grass and someone were to approach us, she will lunge and bark. She'll also do the same thing if a dog gets too close.
Mm-hmm. So that means she's been territorial dominant, but that's
very, very much. So, yeah.
So in some areas you have to work a little harder in some, and your leadership. Obviously,
right.
If you're not taking the leadership, then they take it. See, this is, and this dog of it sounds like it's wonderful and everything, but the whole part of her being territorial and dominant, this is the part that you're not accomplishing 100%. So remember,
right. The dog sees itself as the leader of the pack and
exercise,
not the
call. Discipline affection. So we don't know if you're doing exercise affection discipline. The order changes the reaction, but you have to do exercise discipline affection.
So what can I do in that leadership role? I mean, one thing that works like a charm is, if another dog, as soon as she spots another dog, whether the dog's 10 feet away or 50 yards away, I look at her. As soon as I see she caught that dog's eye, I say, nice, and I throw her a little treat before she reacts at all, negatively. That works like a charm, but...
But you redirect them with food, and that's why she's not getting the message that you're taking over. See, pack leaders don't throw food to create the understanding of that is not allowed by pack leader.
Wouldn't that actually encourage aggressive behavior?
Yes,
because the dog wants more food.
That's right. She's giving food when the mind is alert. Mm-hmm. So she just redirects and you get like 5 seconds of it and then she goes right back. So you need to learn. You need to get a professional to teach you how to do it without the food in the beginning. I understand some people use food, but in your situation, because your dog is already in that state of mind, food is not going to be the best tool to redirect the mind. You have to learn to be.
What would you say? Because we've worked with several excellent trainers who have helped us to get to the situation where we are now, which is much better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not really sure, you know, what to do in order to demonstrate that kind of leadership.
Yeah, you need, and for that case, I need to be right there with you so I can show you. Look, this is how I would do it, and then I will, of course, help you to accomplish it yourself, and then you take it from there.
Are there people here who are...
Yes, there are people. So if you call dogpsychologycenter.com, we can definitely send you with the right person that we feel they have the same philosophy or at least close to our philosophy.
Thank you for calling us, Carrie. We got an email question from Robert. He says he has a 9-month-old Labradoodle. Now, we're seeing more and more Labradoodles and Golden Doodles and other kinds of doodles, and they're all designed to be loving dogs. He writes, over the past month, she has started to resist all of the commands that she learned as a puppy. Sit, stay, lie down. How do I handle adolescent doggy rebellion?
You know, everybody focuses on training the dog. This is why the book is I created the book, because I believe that people need to be trained before people focus on training a dog. You can graduate from Harvard. Doesn't mean you're balanced. So you're trained, not balanced. Balance is what dogs accomplish from day one. The mother doesn't train the puppies. The mother tells the puppies the rules, the boundaries, and the limitations. So it's good to train a dog, but it's important to learn to fulfill the needs of a dog. And this is why you're dealing with a dog that is what you call rebellion, you know, to you because you never play leadership role. You know, most of the people play friendship role and, you know, I'm the mother, I'm the father. But they're not playing leadership role. You play leadership role from the moment you meet the dog because the mother plays that role.
But can you pick it up later?
Absolutely.
Once the bad habits have been established, you can
rehabilitation is always... The good thing about rehabilitating dogs is they live in the moment. See, human takes a little longer because we live in the past and the future and we think about everything we do. But when you watch the show, you see how 11-year-old dog changes state of mind, 7-year-old dog changes state of mind. It's all because he's now in front of an energy that is calm, assertive, which is what I share.
Cesar Millan is my guest on today's Please Explain. He's the star of National Geographic Channel's Dog Whisperer show, and he's written a book called Cesar's Way, The Natural Everyday Guide to Understanding and Correcting Common Dog Problems. It's published by Harmony Books. You had an experience with an ancestor of the dog, a coyote, didn't you? When you came into this country, you were an illegal alien. You must be following the immigration debate with real interest.
An ancestor as a real coyote or human coyote?
Well, it was a human coyote.
Yeah.
Doing a little bit of a segue there, but you didn't know how to speak English.
No, I didn't know how to speak English. You know, my dream was to come to America and learn from Americans how to train dogs. I learned other things about Americans, but now I am, you know, giving the Society of America something they lost or they have been, you know, misled because they're not fulfilling dog. You know, a 68 million dogs in America, and you don't see them all walking with their owners.
So how did you convince people to start listening to you when you were still an undocumented alien?
I think that what it created the wave and the reaction is that I was the only person who was able to walk a pack of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so
how many dogs at a time?
12, 15.
Oh, wow.
Now I walk 50, you know, 50 dogs. So that became my instant, you know, business card and credentials. You know, I was the only one who say, hey, I can rehabilitate a pit bull. I can rehabilitate a Rottweiler. Everybody wanted to train them. And if they're not able to accomplish with their training, then they say, put them down. I would say, don't put them down. Give it to me. I rehabilitate them. And then I give it back to you.
There's no dog that isn't rehabilitatable.
99% of the cases that I have worked with, they get rehabilitated. And this is dog that used to belong to gang members who purposely put them into dog fights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the dog lost the fight, they put gasoline and they light him up. Ugh. So, you know, the aggression towards human became really, really believable.
Diane from White Plains. Hi, you're on Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you very much for having me. I'm not quite sure where to start, but I'm going to do my best. As a dog trainer myself, educated at the San Francisco SPCA by Gene Donaldson, Skinner and Pavlovian concepts, Skinner being behaviorism and Pavlov working with classical conditioning, Skinner focusing on operant conditioning, have been proven for a long time to work very well in domesticated dogs. On the other hand, I find the concept of dominance and submission are not useful constructs. They assign character traits to the dogs in a very anthropomorphic model. They tend to encourage people to use positive punishment, which is risky at best, ineffective at worst. And I think it's much more helpful for people to look at their dogs in terms of what motivates them. And in cases like the woman who was describing her dog that responded poorly when she's sitting in the park, to use carefully executed desensitization and counter conditioning, including the use of food, if that motivates that particular dog in that situation, rather than expecting that the dog is somehow going to understand that she's the leader and that this is a bad thing. We need to institute a Pavlovian counter conditioning program to help that dog handle approaches of people while they're in the park.
Okay, so
whatever
what
works for you.
Uh-huh.
Whatever works for you. That's what the beauty of America is, a lot of choices. So anybody, you know, if people like my technique, well, and then they follow me. If they don't like my technique, then they have another choices, and that's the beauty of it.
And we thank you for your call. And
Absolutely.
We go now to Robin from New York. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Cesar.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
I have a 13-year-old white German Shepherd and soon to be 14, and I live in an apartment here in the city. He has excessive panting. I was very concerned. I took him to the vet. This was last week. And last weekend, I took him to the country, and he didn't pant once. And I'm wondering, is he just anxious here? The panting started, I'd say, about 3 months ago. And I was just really amazed. He didn't pant one time. So to me, that was very strange.
Yeah, my first reaction would have been, he's 13 years old, he's getting old.
Right,
but
exactly.
But do you think that the country, because he had a different kind of environment as
well? You know, everybody goes to Mother Nature's, you know, to accomplish relaxation. So I'm pretty sure he's telling you, hey, this is a better place than the city.
Yeah, that's what I thought also.
Everybody goes to a quiet area when they don't want to deal with the energy of the city.
Right.
So do you think that we should have different approaches to dogs in the city than in the country, even if we love them to death in the country the way we do in the city?
Whatever works for you. As long as you accomplish balance, is how you accomplish the balance. If food gives you the access, if clicker training gives you the access, is whatever gives you access to balance. My goal is just to create balance. It's not one way. It can be many ways as long as the goal is the same.
We have an email from Hope from New Jersey, who writes, I'm in the process of rehabilitating my 18-month-old black lab. She's very shy as a small puppy and has come a long way, but when we ride in the car, she goes crazy and barks aggressively at people walking along the road. Any suggestions about how to correct this behavior?
Well, in one of the episodes in the show, we addressed a little Sheltie that does the same behavior. So you can take it's really hard to address because every time that I work with a dog, I use a different strategy, even though it's the same. I accomplish the same goal, which is a calm, submissive state, you know. And that's just how I call a balanced state of mind. And so it will be hard to really address what kind of strategy this dog should be using or this owner should be using to it.
But is there something that happens when a dog is in a car that excites them in ways that...
I always suggest, you know, if you...
Because they seem to love to be in cars usually, except if they get...
That's the only time they go out. You know, a lot of dogs, that's the only time they actually go out. They don't do it on their feet. So my take on that is make sure the dog is tired before he goes in the car, so when he's in the car, he doesn't have the energy. You know.
So your strategy often is get the dog tired, and then the dog will do what you want.
Because exactly. Exercise, discipline, affection, however you want to apply the discipline.
Somebody wrote in chastising me, Laura, who says, please don't perpetuate the myth that pit bulls are more likely to bite than other breeds. They're not on the top list of biters. The Cocker Spaniel is a number one biter. Now I'm going to get complaints from Cocker owners. you're associating the pit bull again with biting, and it's an unjust accusation. Although I have to tell you that a pit bull in the house I live in made the newspapers because it just would stop biting. Just would not stop biting people, and those people eventually put it down.
Right. But remember, the dogs from the Little Rascals was a pit bull. So, again, it's not the breed. It's who's behind the dog. But everybody talks about Lassie and Rin Tin Tin, and nobody talks about Petey. You know, Petey doesn't become a role model. And it's true. It's not the pit bull.
But when we say discipline, we're not talking about yelling or hitting.
We're not talking about angry human being or frustrated human being. We're not talking about that. Discipline the way animals discipline each other. They do that. You know, elephants discipline each other. Horses discipline each other. Discipline is part of the structure. Discipline is how they become balanced. That's how they stay connected. You know, it's not about being angry and disciplining somebody.
And hitting a dog on its behind is probably the worst way.
That's not what discipline is all about in the animal world.
Thank you so much for being with us, Cesar Millan, host of Dog Whisperer on the National Geographic Channel and author of Cesar's Way, The Natural Everyday Guide to Understanding and Correcting Common Dog Problems. The book is published by Harmony Books, and it's been such a great pleasure having you on. Well, please explain today.
Thanks for the opportunity for dogs.
And thank you all for calling in.